Welcome to Tardi Mecha Nachyomi. My name is Adina Schmidman. I invite you to join the OU Women's Initiative Monday, November 28th at 12 noon Eastern Time for the Siyum for Sefer Yecheska with Mrs. Rena Foreman. Go to ou.org/women/siyum to sign up for reminders and the Zoom link. And now for today's perek.
Welcome to Tardi Mecha Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rena Foreman. And today, we will be studying Yecheskel, Perek Memchet, Chapter 48, the final chapter of the Book of Yecheskel. This final chapter of Yecheskel is devoted almost entirely to the new Gevulot Haaretz, the land portioned out to each of the tribes of Israel. Again, generally, each tribe has a horizontal strip of land going east to west, with the northernmost tribe being Dan and the southernmost tribe being Gad. Toward the middle, a strip is designated as Truma, and within it is a special city in which the Mikdash will ultimately reside. The end of the parak tells of that city. It states that it shall have 12 gates to it, one for each of the tribes. And the final pasuk of the Sefer tells us the name of the city, B'shem Ha'ir Miyom Hashem Shama. And the name of the city is Hashem is there. It seems like an anticlimactic way to end the book. Just a list of the borders of the tribes. Not a lot of drama. And for the final dramatic verse, we couldn't do better than the name of a city. But if we think about this a little more closely, the drama begins to reveal itself. Consider, for example, that long before Yerushalayim was ever called Yerushalayim, its centerpiece, Har HaMoriah, was named by Avraham. V'yikra Avraham Shem HaMakom Ahu Hashem Yireh, Asher Yamer Hayom B'Har Hashem Yireh. Avraham named that place Hashem Yireh. As is said today, on the mountain, Hashem will be seen. Notice the future tense in that pasuk. It will be said today. On the mountain, Hashem will be seen. Something about the name of the mountain expresses a hope, a looking toward the future, toward a time that God's presence will be vivid and there for all to see. And now, turn to the name in Yecheskel, the name of the city given in the last pasuk of the book. B'shem ha'ir miyom Hashem shama. Notice the present tense in the pasuk. No longer is it the place about which will be said today. God will be seen. Now it is from today, Hashem shama. Hashem is simply there. Avram started our journey as a people. Yecheskel, in his vision of the third Mikdash, looks ahead to the end of that great national journey, and he speaks of a time at which that hope of Avraham, the hope that God's presence will become present in the world, will finally become realized. But there's another way this last parak in Yecheskel contains a bit of hidden drama. Its listing of the tribes of Israel is actually a culmination of sorts of another important journey. Yecheskel is speaking about a time when Israel will come back from a long exile, will enter the land, will apportion the land according to tribes, build a mikdash, and set up a stable and just society in the land. Earlier in Tanakh, we had of course tried to do this, but somehow had never been able to make it stick. We had never really been able to establish the just and righteous society that would allow for what we are building in the land to develop powerful deep roots. This time, Yecheskel assures us things will be different. Last parak, we talked a little about how the moral and spiritual development of the people became reflected in the topography of the land. The merry and rebelliousness of the people were gone now, and so was the mar, the bitterness of the water. The entire Yam HaMelech would now be revitalized. Fresh water would flow in cascades and waterfalls from a river that originates under the Mikdash itself. This organic vision of the flourishing of life in Israel isn't really something Yechezkel first came up with in his final prophecy. It's actually something foretold as far back as the moment of Yetziat Mitzrayim, the moment we first set off to take possession of the land. As Israel witnessed the destruction of Paro's enemies in the waters of Yamsuf, they sang a song to Hashem, and that song culminated with these words, "To the emo v'tita emo b'har nachalatcha, machon l'shiftacha pa'alta Hashem, migdash Hashem kunenu yadacha." God will bring us and plant us in the mountain of his heritage, a place for your dwelling you will make, Hashem, your migdash will your hands establish. It's almost as if those words contain Yechezkel's final nevuah, in just a nutshell, his vision of the river with the sturdy trees planted by the side, a river that revitalizes the land that flows from God's own house, the notion that we, Israel, will be planted by the side of that river and will enjoy the same stability as those trees. It is as if Yechezkel is doing nothing more than explaining for us, fleshing out for us, the original vision that we once sang to Hashem in the climax of Shirat Hayam. But to really understand this last prophecy regarding the Gvulot Haaretz, and to really see the grandeur of Yechezkel's final prophecy regarding the Great River, we need to see another side of that prophecy, because there is a second, complementary vision that rounds out our picture of all of this. I'm referring here to a vision we get in the final perek of the book of Zechariah, because, believe it or not, Zechariah actually also speaks about an end-of-days moment when a great river will emanate from beneath the Har Habayit. Here are some excerpts from Zechariah's complementary vision. Zechariah, in the final chapter of his book, he gives a vision of a great final war at the end of days, a war we heard about in Yechezkel 2. It appears to be a version of the War of Gog and Magog. As for the final climactic moment of that war, here's what Zechariah tells us. Va'amdu raglav ba'yom ha'hu al har hazitim asher al pnei Yerushalayim. God's feet, as it were, this is metaphorical, remember, but God's feet will stand on that day upon Har Hazitim, the Mount of Olives, on the face of Yerushalayim. Nivka Har Hazitim. And Har Hazitim will literally split. Michetzio Mizracha Vayama Ge Gdola Ma'od. Half will go to the east and half to the west, creating a great valley. V'nastem ka'asher nastem mipnei ha'ra'ash b'mei Uzziyahu. And you will flee, yes, you will flee just like you fled from before the earthquake in the days of Uzziyahu. V'haya ba'yom ha'hu yivada la'ashem lo yom v'lo laila v'haya la'et erev yi'or. And it shall be on that day a unique day, a day of neither day nor night, a day when even at night there will be light. So Zechariah, in this vision, describes a day in which even the night is bright as day, and then Zechariah tells of a river. V'haya ba'yom ha'hu yetzu maim chayim miYerushalayim. It'll happen on that day that living waters will go out from Yerushalayim. Chetziam el hayam hakadmoni v'chetziam el hayam ha'acharon. Half toward the eastern sea, the Yam HaMelech, and half to the Mediterranean. V'haya Hashem l'melech al kol ha'aretz, b'yom ahu yiyah Hashem echad u'shmo echad. And it will be on that day that God will be the king over all the world. On that day, God will be one, and his name will be one. So it sounds like Zechariah is giving us a version of Yechezkel's vision of the great river at the end of days. He is filling out that vision with some additional details. So let's consider what we have here. Zechariah tells us about a moment in history when mountains will split and a great river will come forth from between them, bringing a great salvation to the people of Israel. So, does that remind you of something, maybe? When else was there a great split involving mighty waters and land, a moment that was also a great salvation for the people of Israel? Zechariah tells us about a time that people will flee in fear because of that split. When else did people flee in fear because of a similar great split? Zechariah tells of a day in which even the night was illuminated like day. When else did that happen? Zechariah tells us that as a result of all the above, God will be proclaimed as king over all the earth. When else are we reminded of that? By now, you probably figured out the other event I'm referring to. It's the splitting of the sea when we left Mitzrayim, Kriyat Yamsuf. The language, by the way, is all the same. Listen to Zechariah describe the splitting of Har HaZeitim. Venivka, Har HaZeitim. That word Venivka, it's the same word Sefer Shemot used to describe the great splitting of the sea. Unitei et yadcha al hayam uvka'ehu. Spread out your hand on the sea, Hashem said to Moshe, uvka'ehu, and split it. And when the sea split, Paro and his armies fled in terror. What's the language? Anusa mipnei Yisrael, ki Hashem nilcham lahem b'mitzrayim. I will flee from before Israel, because God fights for them against Egypt. Anusa mipnei Yisrael. That's the same word that Zechariah will later make use of. V'nastem, kasher nastem mipnei hara'ash. And when the sea split and Paro's armies fled, right before that, what happened to that night? Well, it had turned into day. The Torah tells us that a cloud and fire separated between Mitzrayim and Yisrael. And according to the text, Vayihi ha'anan v'achoshech v'ya'er et halayla. There was cloud and darkness, but the cloud lit up the night. And finally, when Israel emerged safely at the other end of Yam Suf, and they saw that the Egyptians, with all their mighty chariots, had been defeated, they sang a song. And in that song, they looked forward to a time centuries in the future. Tevi'emo v'titaemo b'har nachlatcha, b'chol neshivtacha pa'alta Hashem, mikdash Hashem konenu yadecha. Let God bring us and plant us in the mountain of his inheritance, establishing a place in which he can settle. A mikdash. God, let your hands make. And right after these words, they said, Hashem yimloch le'olam ba'ed. Let God reign le'olam forever and ever. It's almost as if the nation of Israel, at that moment of sweet triumph, looked forward to a time in the future that Zechariah and Yechezkel were talking about. Because in the times of Yechezkel and Zechariah, another great split of land and water would take place, a split that would be a perfect mirror of Kriyat Yam Suf. In Kriyat Yam Suf, water would split into two, revealing a path of dry earth in between, leading to salvation. At the end of days, a mountain of solid earth would split in two, revealing a path of torrential water between them, a river. The salvation that would come from the torrential, life-giving river, it was different, and in a way, even more exalted than the salvation at the original Yam Suf. Because yes, that moment when Har HaZeitim splits, Zechariah does describe as a climactic moment in a great war. But what we see from Zechariah, and especially from Yechezkel, is that this river has another significance. Not only does it save Israel from the death at the hands of enemies, as, for example, splitting water once did when it saved us from the chariots of the Egyptians, but the river gives miraculous new life to an entire area. Healing waters literally come and change the topography of the land. Trees blossom in the desert. Salt marshes become fertile. The Dead Sea starts to teem with fish and marine life. And who benefits from all this? The answer is clearly B'nai Yisrael. But not just B'nai Yisrael. Because if the Dead Sea is full of fish, if waters are cascading from Yerushalayim all the way through the desert into the Negev and the Jordan Valley, the surrounding nations at the edges of Israel benefit from these overflowing waters too. Edom benefits. Yishmael benefits. All the dispossessed children of Avraham, Esav and Yishmael, they all benefit from the life-giving waters of Hashem's house. And so it's not coincidental that at the end of that parak in Zechariah, we hear that all nations must come to Yerushalayim on Sukkot, together with B'nai Yisrael, to give thanks to Hashem for the waters they depend on. And it is no coincidence that right after Zechariah speaks about these life-giving waters, he tells, Hayah Hashem lamelech al kol haaretz, b'yomahu yiyah Hashem echad, ushmo echad. On that day, not just Israel, but surrounding nations will come to recognize God as king over the world, not just because God was the author of a great military victory. Yes, God will have done that too, but because God also gave life-giving waters to Israel and the entire region. God will have healed the topography of the land, brought the destroyed area of stone with its barren salt flats back into what it was again. Kegan Hashem ke'eretz Mitzrayim, a place as fertile as the Garden of Eden itself. So let's just take a moment and consider what we've seen here. Back when Bnei Israel left their first exile, look what happened. We had basically five events that took place one after another. Makas Bechoros, a 10 plague with blood on the doors and saving of houses dedicated to Hashem. A celebration of a first Pesach holiday with a command to eat matzot for 7 days. A splitting of the sea. A sweetening of bitter waters, followed by the revelation of 12 wells, seemingly for 12 tribes of Israel. And finally, Israel, Bnei Israel, would cross over into the land of Israel and actually divide the land into an inheritance for each of those 12 tribes. But again, from that point on, things faltered. We tried to establish a mikdash for God, but our society became corrupted, and we couldn't maintain that permanent house for Hashem in our midst. And eventually, the mikdash was destroyed. Until finally, we reached Zechariah and Yechezkel's final prophecies. They look forward to a time when we will somehow come full circle, when we will re-experience those five things. Yechezkel told us that as the Bayit Shlishi, the third house, will be consecrated, we will get blood on the door once more, marking this house as a house of God eternally. We get a celebration of Chag HaMatzot as part of the dedication ceremony of this house. And right after that, we get a version of the splitting of the sea. This time, it is the splitting of a mountain with raging waters rushing out from beneath the house of Hashem. And what will these waters do? They will do the next thing on the list, sweeten the bitter waters, not just of a small oasis, but of an entire region, an entire sea, the Yam HaMelech. And that brings us back to Yechezkel, Perek Memchet, our Perek, the last in the book. Finally, Israel, back from exile, they will do the next thing on the list. They will divide up the land, giving it out to its 12 tribes once more. That's how Sefer Yechezkel closes. You know, here is where the book comes full circle, because think back to the very first Perek, back to the vision of the Merkava in Perek Aleph. That chariot was God's mobile home in exile. It was a mobile home up in the heavens, but the third Mikdash, it is the chariot come to earth, permanent this time, right here among us on the ground. And now think about the Kavod Hashem, something Yechezkel associates with this chariot and with the Beit HaMikdash that permanently houses the Shechina here on earth. When really was the first time the Torah talks about the Kavod Hashem, a theme so popular in Sefer Yechezkel? The first time, at least as far as I can remember, is actually in Kriyat Yamsuf. There Hashem says, Va'amar paro livnei Yisrael, Nevuchim hem ba'aretz, sagar lehem hamidbar, v'radav acharehem, v'kabda b'paro uv'chol chilo. And Paro will say about Israel, they are pitiful in the land. The desert has closed up on them, and the Egyptians will chase you. But I, my kavod will come through Paro and through all of his armies. Think about those words, and think about the end of Yechezkel. Doesn't it feel like it's all happening again? Here in Israel, freshly back from the enslavement at the hands of other nations, and it's newly set up in its own land. But maybe they seem pitiful. After all, most of the heartland is desert, Midbar Yehuda, the plains of the Dead Sea, harsh sun-baked stones, the cliffs of Masada, majestic. But what can we really grow there? It's like Sagar Alehem Amidbar. This nation, Israel, God promised them a land of milk and honey, but they are just shut up in the desert. But God overturns those assumptions. Hashem does so just as he once overturned Paro's smug assumptions about us being shut up in the desert. And his tools to overturn those assumptions? Back then, it was the walls of water and a path of dry land. Now, it's the walls of earth and a path of gushing water. And through those miraculous waters, God's kavod will truly come to the world. Back in Yetziat Mitzrayim, God said that his kavod will come through a king's mighty armies and chariots. And so would it be in the future. Once more, Hashem's kavod would come through a king's chariot. But this time, the chariot would be that of the King of Kings himself, Melech Malchei Hamlachim. And it wouldn't come through the chariot's destruction. It would come through that heavenly chariot finding a comfortable home right here on earth. Paro's chariot, it was a weapon of destruction. It was designed to ride on earth, but it became destroyed when it no longer could ride on earth, when it was swept away by the waters of Yam Suf. Well, God's chariot, it might have been designed to ride in the waters of Hashem, in Shamayim, Shamayim, a word that can be read to mean there is God's waters. But instead, that chariot would find a home on earth. It could be so because humans would succeed in establishing a just society, a society that followed God's laws and values. And when that chariot would successfully land on earth, when God's home would no longer be confined to a mobile chariot, Merkava, well then, God would no longer just be in Shamayim, the water world of heaven. God in his Mikdash would be somewhere else, in a city whose earthly people live by heavenly values, in a city whose name is not Shamayim, but Sham Hashem. There is God. Thank you for studying together. Leilu Nishmat, Riva Schwab, Rivka Bat Alexander Sender.